The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
There's a reason that we live so far from Hollywood, in the country looking hard to find a home, with nothing perfect or considered.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt here, June 16th, 2020, in the year of the plague. Global coronavirus infections pass 8 million. 8 million people have the coronavirus, and reports out of Beijing is that the new strain is even more, not deadly, it transmits even easier. So that we expect it to spread more rapidly than round one. So the warning remains the same, which is if you are old and you are infirm or you have an underlying condition, you really don't want to go out. And when you go out, you should always wear a mask. And because of the infirmity of others around you, you should wear a mask in public places. I know most of you have stopped doing that, but we're going to live with this until after we have a vaccine and better therapeutics and stay in shape. That's my only advice to you is do your best you can to stay in shape, lose some weight, and wear a mask in public. Israel inked a deal with Moderna for, I believe, millions and millions of doses of the Moderna COVID vaccine, which is in its final stage with 30,000 participants in its July clinical trial. That is good news, and that brings me to the market update early today. Early, brought to you by Birch Gold. If you are not diversified into gold, you ought to be. You ought to send my name, Hugh, text it to 474747. If you don't know how to text, ask your son, daughter, grandson, granddaughter. They can do it immediately. Or you can go to hughgold.com. They don't do phones because they want to send you information, so they can't send you information over a phone. The information they send is perfectly free. It explains how to diversify your retirement portfolio, how to put gold in your, how to purchase real gold. Don't buy collectibles. I'm not one of those people. I don't believe in them. Buy Krugerrands, buy American Eagles, buy Canadian Maples, or do so through their agency, have them lock it up, and it becomes part of your IRA retirement. And gold this morning is trading at, checking the marketplace for you, $1,737 an ounce, up 0.5% over yesterday. So if you'd listened to my advice yesterday, you'd be up 0.5% already. Yesterday, stocks were up 157 points on the Dow. The NASDAQ was up 137 points. And the S&P was up 25. Amazon, which is my, used to be just my proxy for the tech sector. It's now my proxy for people who are buying from home, was up $27 yesterday. Early trading suggests it's going to have another booming day. As Wall Street Journal says, U.S. stocks futures rally ahead of retail sales data. They're looking to see what people bought in May. Mostly from home, mostly from Costco and Target and Amazon. I always tell people it's the only stock I own, but they believe another stimulus is on the way from the Federal Reserve, which will again assist people. I just think if that happens, and it is going to happen because we need protection against COVID-related lawsuits, I believe that the Republicans have a reason to do it. The Democrats have a reason to do it because some state treasuries are completely bankrupt. When we get there, when we do that, I believe there will be fiscal stimulus measures in there. I hope they include, they ought to include, I will talk with Senator Tom Cotton later in the day about them including a defense appropriation to plus up the Department of Defense, which has been badly battered in that a lot of their supplies have been delayed and the prices have increased because of the COVID impact on manufacturing of critically necessary defense supplies. So we'll talk with Senator Cotton about that. But overall, economy looks to be rebounding sharply. We won't know employment numbers for another 3 weeks. But again, yesterday was a very good day on the market. And the Dow up 157, NASDAQ up 137. Overseas this morning, England is up 2.25 points, and Germany is up 2.75 points. And a market that's already closed, the day is already over in Japan, right? They're so far ahead of us. It's, you know, it's Tuesday evening. They went up 5% on their market. The 10-year Treasury is up to 0.7%, which is rebounding again. I would like to see it over 1% to tell me that normality is back. And light crude is trading at $37 a barrel this morning. All good reasons to diversify. All good reasons to go to Birch Gold via texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. The bad news in the rundown this morning, 600,000 people in the United Kingdom lost their jobs. 600,000 people, the Telegraph reports today, that the UK labor market is in suspended animation as furlough costs near $20 billion. The big news of yesterday, though it wasn't big news, was actually what Ben Carson said on this show yesterday. We kind of drove headlines all over the place when he said he was going to work on the president's position on the national anthem. I don't know that the president will change his position on the national anthem. I've been thinking about it overnight. Maybe necessary for the NFL not to play the national anthem, because it's going to appear to me to be impossible to persuade people that it's other than about being disrespectful of the military. And a lot of the football players say they don't want to be disrespectful of the military, and I believe them. They want to protest excessive use of force by police. And that's fine, but finding a different way to do it would be better. And it may be that the NFL, of course, that would require Roger Goodell to do something smart. And baseball and football are led by people who are not going to go down in history as the people who won the spelling bee. In fact, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred said yesterday there will be no baseball season at all in 2020. Now, he couched it a little bit in terms of possibility. But boy, oh boy, it seems to me like it's not going to happen. Generalissimo, for the rundown, can I borrow you for a second? What do you think about a tournament for this year?
We're at the point now where if we're past the All-Star break part of the season, which we're getting really close to, I think we take a powder and we start again next year. I think we take the year off.
Well, you know, that's not good for some players because they lose their tool set and they lose all their money and they've got families to feed.
None of this is a perfect scenario. Who it hurts is the minor leaguers. The major leaguers, it doesn't hurt as much. The major leaguers, even minimum salary, they can actually go a year without the pay.
What I'm thinking about is now maybe just a tournament. And the World Series of 19
and have it not
2020.
Count, well, as long as you don't have a count for anything, you don't apply it to historical stats, that's fine.
No, I mean, the stats would count and the ring would count, but it would have an asterisk next to it. And my idea
Just like an Astros year.
Yeah, 13 game. How many teams have got? 32?
30.
So it's 16. Okay, 30 games, 15, two-team. You work it out in your head, 13-game series, then 11-game series, then 9-game series.
But what do the games look like?
Nine-inning games. Nine real games, but it's a tournament, so you're not playing everywhere. It's a play out. So if the Tigers, as I hope would happen, go out in the first round, they're out. And the Indians, it's a little mini season after mini season. It's like the NCAAs, but it's in baseball format. In other words, have you ever watched the College World Series? That's what the College World Series
sure.
does. Four teams play in. They play a 7-game. So we have 30 teams play in, but you start them with 13-game seasons, then 11-game playoffs, then 9, and then 7 until the end.
That's fine. But yeah, as far as a season, you're really not going to have.
We're not having a season.
You're really not going to have one.
We're not. I mean, 50 games isn't a season. 50 games is spring training.
If you do the tournament now, how do you compensate the players? How does that
However many games they play total, they get that prorated amount of their salary they were supposed to
receive. Is the players' union going to go along with that?
No.
And, of course not. So,
but they are, oh, by the way, it's for the longest number of games played. So however many games they play, the longest number applies retroactively to everyone. If you lose, you don't lose your whole season. That's gambling.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I will come back to the Supreme Court case afterwards, but that's the rundown. I want to explain the Supreme Court ruling is not what you thought it is. It's not a big deal. I know that the LGBTQ community thought this was as big as Obergefell. It's not. It's a statutory construction case in which Justice Gorsuch used an extreme form of textualism, which produces an unusual result, but it's also not one to upend the world and which bodes well for conservatives who want the laws to rule. It just means you've got to draft more carefully. Chief Justice Roberts voted with him to make sure he got to write the opinion. But it's Justice Gorsuch's tick. He's an extreme textualist. That's what you get. So don't tear your hair out, conservatives. It's not that big of a deal. Don't start calling suitor, suitor, suitor. It's not suitor, suitor, suitor. I'll explain after the break on this morning's edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I just want to tell you how I'm feeling.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt from the ReliefFactor.com studio inside of the Beltway. Yesterday, the Supreme Court made two decisions that mattered. One ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act and its definition of the prohibition of discrimination in the workplace on the basis of race, creed, color, and sex applied to LGBTQT people. And that is a shock to a lot of people who thought that the 1964 Civil Rights Act could not possibly have meant transgendered. I read Justice Gorsuch's opinion for the 6-3 majority, and I understand what he's saying. I don't agree with it, but neither is it revolutionary. He says if you read sex into that and a gay man is fired because he's gay, if he comes in one day with his gay husband and his employer says, you're fired, I don't like gays, that's now most certainly illegal under the federal law because the Supreme Court ruled it was intended to be. Sam Alito issued a dissent saying in 1964, no one knew what transgendered meant. And Justice Gorsuch says sex is it contains multitudes. And from my proposition, I agree with Sean Trendy, who believes the Chief Justice agreed with the majority strategically. Because when the Chief Justice is in the majority, the Chief Justice assigns the opinion. Justice Gorsuch made his views known that he was going to vote to interpret the 1964 Civil Rights Statute the way that he did, which is unique for a textualist. And the Chief Justice joined in order to assign it to him so that it would be as narrow as possible, as opposed to having Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg assign the opinion to herself and have Neil Gorsuch concur. So it becomes a 6-3 opinion that simply says sex includes sexual orientation. Now, why am I not exercised over this? First of all, it's a statutory case, not a constitutional case. The big cases that are coming down the road this year have to do with religious liberty. There is, by the way, an exception in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 for religious organizations. They may hire on the basis of sex, and they may fire on the basis of sex, and they may hire and fire based on the nature of their creed. And Justice Gorsuch holds it very high. So does Justice Kavanaugh. So does Justice Roberts. So I don't think this is actually going to have an effect on anyone. If you're a freedom and federalism person, you care most about freedom, and you care most about structural federalism, and that's what I do. And as Ilya Shapiro writes in the National Review today, we are all textualists now. Justice Alito said his textualism means that sexual orientation is not covered in the 1964 Act, just as, of course, it says his textualism is. And the net of this is very small because 25 states, including the largest ones except Florida and Texas, already ban discrimination based on sexual orientation. As a practical matter, it's already out of the workplace because it is not considered acceptable to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, and businesses will lose customers in the marketplace if they do. So I'm not exercised over this. It's a statutory case. I tried to explain to a friend of mine last night who said, are you happy? Are you sad? I said, I really don't care about this case. It's a statutory case. It's an unusual case in that everyone claims to be a textualist, but it's not the constitutional case. The cases I'm most interested in are the religious liberty cases and the abortion cases that are coming. He was fairly exercised with me for declining to declare that this was a great day for justice. It wasn't a great day for justice. It wasn't a great day for any civil rights. I don't know anyone who wants to fire gay people or transgendered people based upon their sexual orientation or their gender identification. I don't. It's just not done in modern America. So it's not Obergefell. It doesn't make same-sex marriage a constitutional right. It's not that kind of a case. At the same time this case came down, a case involving the right to build pipelines in America, blowing away environmentalist nonsense, came down that allows people to build $8 billion pipelines under the Appalachian Trail, which is far more important in a real-world way. And it was a 7-2 decision written by Clarence Thomas. So spare me if I'm celebrating the creation of jobs in America and not the actual consequence of the other is almost nothing, almost zero. So that's my take on that. Stay tuned.
Where do we go from here, my friend? Is this the way our story ends? Hey, man, sing me a song. When we were everyone, we were more than just a slice of American pie. Can't stop singing along. Of American pie. We're top down lovers. It's Saturday night. The band's rolling and it feels so right. The moon's dancing and the stars are free. I caught your heart on a summer breeze. Whatever was or what's meant to be, our melodies, our memories.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining me this morning. The president and the vice president greeted a group of seniors to the White House yesterday to talk about senior policy. The media was invited in. A, quote, spray occurred. I'd like you to hear some of that. You may have seen some of it, not seen much of it on the news last night. Donald Trump talking with John Roberts of Fox News addressed the Chaz Zone in Seattle, cut number 6.
You know, they're negotiating garbage removal. These people have taken over a vast part, a major part, a very good part of a place called Seattle. Seattle's big stuff. That's a major city. And we have a governor who's a stiff, and we have a mayor who said, oh, this is going to be a love fest. And by the way, these are violent people that took it over. These are not people that are nice people. I saw her on your network today, John. I saw what went on with the hitting and the punching and the beating and all the other things going on in Seattle. And you have a governor that doesn't do a damn thing about it. And you have a mayor that doesn't know she's alive. She's talking about it's going to be a love fest this summer. Now, if they don't do the job, I'll do the job. And I've already spoken to the attorney general about it. But if they don't do the job, we will do the job.
What can you do?
About 10 different things. Either any one of which will solve the problem quickly.
Can we go through a whole list or partial list?
We don't have to go through any list. We can do a lot of things.
Hey, Mr. President,
I think it's incredible also that the radical left press doesn't cover it. They're acting like nothing happened. You turn on the news, you look at the news, you don't even see stories about it. If the right ever took over a city, conservative Republicans took over a city, it would be the biggest story in history. You can't even find stories about Seattle. It's incredible.
How much longer?
They've taken over. We'll see. I tell you what, the American public is very angered by that. Seattle is a major, important city. And the Democrats, I guess you say radical left, but it's not even radical left. It's just Democrat. Where we have our problem are Democrat-run cities. If you look at Minneapolis, if you look at other cities that have had trouble, they're Democrat in virtually every case that I can think of. I can't think of one other case. These are Democrat-run cities. Minneapolis, where the police are told to run for your lives. Don't do anything. And if I didn't get involved and send in the National Guard, and it was at my insistence that they did that, and as soon as I did that, everything stopped in Minneapolis 4 days, 5 days later.
Is there a timeline that you're thinking here in Seattle?
There's no timeline. We're watching it very closely. These are violent people that are dealing violently, and I think what I'd like to see before we do something, I'd like to see the press get in and cover it, because they're not, it's not that they're covering it badly, they're hardly covering it at all. Think of this. A group, Antifa and others, radical lefts, they went into a major U.S. city, Seattle, and they took over a big percentage of that city, and the press doesn't want to cover it. And we have a mayor who's scared stiff. She doesn't know what's happening. We have a governor that's one of the most overrated politicians in the country. He just ran for president. He got less than 1%. He actually probably, I would have said less than zero, but I'm not sure that's possible. He got nothing. He got no votes, nothing. The whole thing, the guy was out there fighting. At the end, he got zero, right? Zero. So he failed. And now he goes back and they take over a city and he doesn't say anything about it. Worse, he said he didn't hear a day later. He said, I didn't hear anything about it. They took over a city, Seattle. And he said, I didn't hear anything about it. So look, the governor has to call out the troops, do what he has to do, has to call out the National Guard, has to do something. Because, you know, the problem with what happened in Seattle is it spreads. And all of a sudden, they'll say, let's do some other city, and let's do another one. And we're not going to let it happen. So timing-wise, hey, we're all set to go. We're watching the process. But the most amazing thing about the process is how the fake news media doesn't want to cover it.
And he's right. And the fake news media doesn't want to cover it because it does make Democrats look bad, and the fake news media is an arm of the Democrats. Honest to goodness, the Seattle thing is, for the reason the president said, very concerning. If it becomes obvious to Antifa that they will not be in any way molested, then Columbus goes up. Then Austin, Texas, I don't think they'll try this in Texas, actually. Texas business owners are going to object mightily if they take over eight blocks, or is it four blocks? I don't know what it is. But there was lots else in the presser yesterday. Donald Trump spoke about NATO and Germany and why we are withdrawing troops from it. Cut number one.
So we have 52,000 soldiers in Germany. That's a tremendous amount of soldiers. It's a tremendous cost to the United States. And Germany, as you know, is very delinquent in their payments to NATO, and they're paying 1%, and they're supposed to be at 2%, and the 2% is very low. It should be much more than that. So they're delinquent of billions of dollars, and this is for years delinquent. So we're removing we're putting the number down to 25,000 soldiers. We'll see what happens. But Germany has not been making payment. In addition to that, I was the one that brought it up. Everybody talks about Trump with Russia. Well, I brought this up a long time ago. Why is Germany paying Russia billions of dollars for energy, and then we're supposed to protect Germany from Russia? How does that work? It doesn't work. So Germany's delinquent. They've been delinquent for years, and they owe NATO billions of dollars, and they have to pay it. So we're protecting Germany, and they're delinquent. That doesn't make sense. So I said we're going to bring down the soldier count to 25,000 soldiers. It varies. It's around 52,000 now, but it varies. But it's a lot. And as you know, those are well-paid soldiers. They live in Germany. They spend vast amounts of money in Germany. Everywhere around those bases is very prosperous for Germany. So Germany takes, and then on top of it, they treat us very badly on trade. We have a trade with the EU, and Germany being the biggest member, Very, very badly on trade, and we're negotiating with them on that. But right now, I'm not satisfied with the deal they want to make. They've cost the United States hundreds of billions of dollars over the years on trade. So we get hurt on trade, and we get hurt on NATO. Now, with NATO, I've raised other countries $140 billion. They're paying $140 billion more because I interceded. I said, look, you know, we're protecting you. You have to pay your bills. Because it was going like this until I got here. Now it's gone like a rocket ship. But one of the only countries that hasn't agreed to pay what they're supposed to pay is Germany. So I said, until they pay, we're removing our soldiers, a number of our soldiers, by about half. And then when we get down to 25,000, we'll see where we're going. But Germany has been delinquent. And why should we be doing what we're doing if they don't pay? And they're supposed to pay. And the number they're supposed to pay, actually, at 2%, the 2% should be higher. And we're also talking about for many years. This isn't a new phenomenon. This is going on for many years where they've taken advantage of the United States. But everybody has, under Biden and under Obama. What they've done to this country is unbelievable. And I'm not only talking about Germany, by the way. I'm talking about plenty of other countries. But NATO now is paying $140 billion more. If you look at the Secretary General, who's terrific, Stoltenberg, he's been terrific. He's probably my biggest fan. He said nobody else could have done what Trump did because I raised the other countries by $140 billion because we end up paying the difference. The United States pays the difference to protect Europe. So we protect them, and then they take advantage of us on trade for many, many years. We're not talking about now, less so now, for many years. So we're working on a deal with them, but it's very unfair. And I would say by far the worst abuser is Germany.
He's right, by the way, about the Germans. He's absolutely right. And building this Russian Nord Stream gas line is completely contrary to the idea of our troops being there. He's absolutely right. The Germans are two-faced. They always have been in the Central Europe. They play the game as a Central European power, and we shouldn't play it with them. The president spoke about justice at the roundtable as well, reacting, of course, to the death of George Floyd and others. Cut number two.
So the overall goal is we want law and order, and we want it done fairly, justly. We want it done safely, but we want law and order. This is about law and order, but it's about justice also, and it's about safety. So I think we're going to do a good job tomorrow. I think you're going to see some things that a lot of people thought would not happen. You wouldn't be able to get them done, but we'll get them done. Again, though, I want to emphasize it's possible the House can also, on top of this, I spoke to the various leaders, on top of this can get something. But I think this will be very comprehensive tomorrow. So
he also spoke about the shooting, the deadly shooting of Rashard Brooks in Atlanta two nights ago. Cut number seven.
I thought it was a terrible, I'm not going to compare things, but I thought it was a terrible situation. I studied it closely. I'm going to get some reports done today, very strong reports, and we'll have a little more to say about it tomorrow. But certainly it was very, to me, it was very disturbing.
And then finally, he talked about the Supreme Court case on the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which I've already discussed on the show this morning. The president had this to say about what the Supreme Court said about LGBTQ cases. Cut number four.
No, they've ruled. I've read the decision, and some people were surprised, but they've ruled, and we live with their decision. That's what it's all about. We live with the decision of the Supreme Court. Very powerful, a very powerful decision, actually. But they have so ruled.
They have so ruled. Remember all that stuff about authoritarianism? We ought to put this on the board, Dwayne. Put this on my board somewhere. Cut number four. Donald Trump on the 1964 Act, Civil Rights Act, applying to sexual orientation. Cut number four.
No, they've ruled. I've read the decision, and some people were surprised, but they've ruled, and we live with their decision. That's what it's all about. We live with the decision of the Supreme Court. Very powerful, a very powerful decision, actually. But they have so ruled.
They have so ruled. Authoritarian. David Drucker joins me next, America. Stay tuned. Whoa. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by David Drucker of the Washington Examiner. Follow him on Twitter at David M. Drucker. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh.
I've got in my hand a wish list that the Trump administration is hoping comes through in phase four with regards to defense spending, including $11.5 billion to cover cost overruns from COVID-19, a bunch of places shut down and reopen and shut down and reopen. They need $5.5 billion for defense industrial base protection. They need a $24 billion to fund a new Virginia-class submarine, a bunch of Coast Guard cutters, some E-2D surveillance aircraft. All told, about $40 billion, it looks to me. But that's not much if they go to phase four. Is there going to be a phase four?
Unclear. Look, I mean, I think there's a question over how much money Republicans want to spend in the Senate in particular. There's also the question of what Democrats in the House will spend money on. They want to spend plenty, but on what? And then it sort of depends on where the president decides to throw his weight around. I mean, he obviously can still be a driving player in how much money the government spends related to the pandemic, on what, but where is he going to throw his weight around? As you know, that's always sort of an unclear proposition. Sometimes he's for something, it turns out later he doesn't like it after all. Sometimes you kind of get to the end of the negotiation and he throws something else in there just to mix it all up. So, you know, let's see if we can get a definitive sort of definition and list of items from him directly, not just from White House officials, laying out what the president wants and, you know, what he might be willing to horse trade for.
Now, there is a larger list running around the West Wing with $1 trillion in spending that includes infrastructure. I just focused on the DOD list, which is less than $50 billion out of the trillion. And, you can always forward appropriate and give the company money, but I don't think Mitch McConnell likes that very much, and Congress doesn't like that very much. But it shows that there is a desire to spend some more money to make sure the recovery is going. What do the Democrats want, David Drucker?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I think that Trump and the Democrats could make a deal on infrastructure spending. But, you know, I still think this thing is going to sort of get caught up in the weeds because they're going to want spending to be handled in a certain way. I mean, look, Republicans want a lot of liability protections. They're going to want that in any major spending bill. Democrats are going to want the unions taken care of in any major spending bill. Look, I've been doing this dance. We've been doing this infrastructure dance now for what, three and a half years. I'll never believe it's going to happen until it happens, and you just prove me wrong.
Well, I don't think infrastructure
on the night he was elected, and we still don't have an infrastructure bill.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen either. But I do think there's not going to be a phase four without company protection from COVID lawsuits. That's just not starting. So either there will be one or there won't, right? That's the non-negotiable.
Look, if the economy continues, if we continue to move away from lockdown steadily, even though it'll be a little bit uneven, some states, you know, more ahead of others, and the general feeling is that the economy is improving, there's going to be even less appetite on the part of Senate Republicans to add to the debt, because after all of the initial spending, they started to get skittish about it, even before things had opened up as much as they have now, and there was as much optimism, at least in Republican circles, for this idea that maybe the recovery is going to go faster than economists and others had initially predicted.
But I want the audience to understand, Republicans want plaintiffs' lawyer protection. They hear from their constituents, especially the restaurant industry, we cannot reopen without protection from lawsuits. So they want something. The Democrats want some state bailout. So there's a need. There's a must-have on both sides. You mentioned something I want to drill down on, David, that they want some public employee money. You know, police are public employees. Police unions have come under fire. I think teachers' unions ought to come under fire, too. But are Democrats wanting to fund public employee pensions and without police reform?
Well, look, I think that's a whole separate issue here. I mean, what I was talking about is if you're going to do an infrastructure bill, they're going to want to make sure that firms that with union employees are going to be heavily in the mix. And this is always something that trips up negotiations over major project spending when you're talking about the two parties in Congress. I mean, I think what's going on with police reform is a whole separate issue, because what you've seen is actually Republicans on Capitol Hill are embracing police reform. It's just it may or may not be, and we don't know that it won't be, but it may be, you know, they may have a different idea of police reforms than do Democrats, but they may not. Republicans have been very cautious and not quick to dismiss some of the Democratic proposals, so we're going to just have to see how it unfolds.
Well, one of those proposals is qualified immunity and defining that, and that is a statutory issue. The other, though, is to prohibit or greatly limit public employee union activities by the police. Do the Democrats actually have the stomach for that, David Drucker?
Yeah. We'll see. Possible they do, given how much the unions have been involved in protecting some of their rank and file from significant reform, but I think we're going to have to see how this goes.
You know, the moment that brick comes out of the wall, teachers are next, because they're responsible, the unions, not the teachers. The teachers' unions are responsible for protecting bad teachers in the way that police unions have protected bad cops. David M. Drucker on Twitter, thank you. Coming right back, America Hour number 2 with Byron York. Don't go anywhere.